Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next 2 hours, we will be discussing the world of professional wrestling at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on the conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in our chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Well, it was a big week in wrestling, wasn't it? I mean, first we have Impact's Bound for Glory, where there were a couple of new champions crowned. We'll be talking a little bit about that. We've had Eric Bischoff respond to Tony Khan. Who was responding to Eric Bischoff as that possible feud gains a little momentum? And we have Charlotte Flair reportedly being escorted out of the arena at SmackDown. So that's quite a few little stories to take care of. Let's start first with Bound for Glory, where a couple of things happened. First thing is that we have crowned new women's tag team champions. The Iconics, now known as the Inspiration, defeats Decay. So it's been quite a little bit of a run for them, hasn't it? I mean, they went from obscurity and being used as a comedy act primarily, and then being released to being the Impact Tag Team Champion. So, I mean, I guess good for them. I'm going to be honest with you about the Iconics, Impact, whichever you want to call, or Inspiration, whichever you want to call them, and their run in Impact, and that's this. If you want to use them differently, you know, I understand that. But really, honestly, the WWE's main problem with the Iconics was, you're right, they didn't use them well enough, or perhaps give them enough credit. But they were really good at what they used them for. In other words, I was not really opposed to the Iconics being sort of a comedy tag team. A tag team that didn't really win a lot, but they were there to start feuds, and they had a lot of airtime with their mic work and some of their backstage antics and things. And, you know, they were in the mix, put it that way. I don't think they got enough airtime. I don't think they got enough storyline. But as far as do you elevate them to the ranks of champion, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I didn't see anything that would make me think, oh, yes, this is championship quality tag team. I think they're very good at what they do, but I think the WWE was using them for exactly what they do really well. They just weren't using them enough. But nonetheless, they defeat Decay. They become the women's tag team champions, and, you know, good for them. We'll see how that works out for Impact. We should get right to the nitty-gritty. No, Braun Strowman did not make an appearance. No, obviously, Bray Wyatt didn't make an appearance. Bronson Reed didn't make an appearance. None of the people you thought might make an appearance made an appearance. Buddy Murphy didn't make an appearance. However, we did get Christian Cage, Josh Alexander. We got a double switch of the titles. Josh Alexander defeats Christian Cage. And then moments later, the pick your choice or whatever the heck battle royal it was, Moose defeats Josh Alexander. So Moose is finally the champion. This is another move that I say to myself, well, it depends on why you did it. If you have somebody coming in, and I think you might, who you're going to put that belt on, and you wanted it to go to Moose for that reason, okay. If he's a transitional champion and you've got your eyes set on a match to put a much more high-profile person in there as champion, I'm good with it. If you do not, Moose is not your guy. He's a good wrestler. He's not your guy. He's not the guy that's going to bring a bunch of eyes to this product. And if your name recognition is so poor that you're going to put the belt on the Iconics for name recognition, you'd think you'd want a other name other than Moose. Not that Josh Alexander was either. And I understand why they had to take it away from Christian, since it appears that that partnership is kind of faded now with AEW. But I think probably Impact has something else in mind. I'll wait and see, and I'm not going to speculate, but from everything I'm hearing, Moose is probably going to be a short-term champion. You're going to have someone with a much bigger name be the champion. Good event. Mickie James defeats Deonna Purrazzo. She's the new Knockouts champion. So you see where I'm going with this, right? They put Mickie James as new champion. She has much more name recognition. They put the Inspiration, the Iconics, as tag team champions. They have much more name recognition. So I'm not convinced that Moose is the guy they think has the name recognition to carry that title. I think this is very short term. Anyway, Mike, it was a pretty good event. Good for Impact Wrestling. They're starting to shape up a bit, and they're getting their ducks in a row, and it'll be interesting to see what the winter brings.
Right, and you're right. They had to get that, you know, he is, Christian is not under contract with them. He's under contract right. with AEW, if I'm not mistaken. So
right.
In one respect, that title change makes a lot of sense. Get it off a guy who's not under contract. Just like, yeah, it was a good idea at the time to put it on Kenny Omega, but Kenny Omega, again, is not under contract to Impact, as far as I know. So getting it out for Christian is a good idea, and you're right about Moose. He's been with them for how long now? And if he could move the needle any other way, they would have put the title around him sooner.
Agreed. That's a very good point. That's an excellent point. I'm glad you brought that up. That's 1,000% true. They didn't just wake up yesterday and say, yeah, let's go with Moose because he's been kicking around here for a while and we really think that he's the man. You're absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct. They decided, well, listen, we'll do the Josh Alexander thing. Then Moose will come in and that'll be a big deal at the end. And he'll be someone who the fans are looking forward to seeing lose, and we're going to bring in someone. So I think they got someone at the tips of their fingers here that they're going to bring in. I'll tell you something. Don't sleep on Impact Wrestling. Really, don't. I know their station is bad. A lot of people don't get it. I understand all the criticisms. But when I watch, I said to myself, you know, this is a neat little federation. They do things pretty well. They've got a decent roster. They're about to have a little better roster. Don't sleep on these guys. You know, while WWE and AEW is fighting it out for bragging rights, which I don't understand. We'll get into that a little bit later. Don't sleep on Impact being an alternative to fans of this nonsensical, you know, quien es más macho, as they say, who's the toughest, who's the best. Because Impact can deliver, and they did deliver. This was a very strong event, I thought, Todd, and I was pretty happy with it.
I'm absolutely right, like you said, about this the Impact Wrestling thing last night. I didn't watch it, but I heard of the results and everything. By the looks of it, with photos and everything, it looked like a good pay-per-view.
It was. It really was. Now let's talk a little bit about this Eric Bischoff situation before we get into this Charlotte Flair thing that has everybody's heads exploding. Eric Bischoff had made a statement saying that Tony Khan really needs to stop worrying about what the ratings are because he's not competition for the WWE. They're not direct competition. They don't air their product at the same time. And except for that one half hour lag over, they don't air their product at the same time, and there's no reason to compare the ratings. And he said, we did air our product at the same time, exactly the same time. And this is coming from a guy who pulled every trick in the book. But at the end of the day, didn't well for me. Tony Khan kind of responded negatively, let Eric Bischoff have it a bit. And I think, and Eric Bischoff had taken umbrage to Tony Khan saying, Ted Turner may be smarter than me as a businessman, but he's not smarter than me when it comes to wrestling. He's not 1% of what I know about wrestling. He doesn't know. Eric Bischoff took some umbrage to that and said, here we go again with I'm this and I'm that, I'm the other thing. And now Eric Bischoff has responded and said, look, I have a good relationship with Tony Khan, and I hope I still do. But if Tony Khan is going to try to fudge numbers and say, well, in this demographic that's key during this hour, we're technically better, and it's not even an hour that's running opposite of WWE. And he also said, remember, you keep comparing Raw, which Raw is hurt every week during football season by football. You know it's hurt every football season by football. So you already know that some of their ratings is down. So what you're doing is you're taking the worst of theirs, comparing it to the best of yours to give you a favorable number. And you shouldn't even be worried about that because you're 2 years into the business and you should be saying 2 years into the business, we're drawing 900,000, 800,000, sometimes even a million. I take that as a personal success rather than trying to compare yourself with someone who's been in the business for 50 some odd years and you're just not there. And how far are you going to fudge down these numbers? You know, we did a poll and if you're 19 to 19 and a half, you know, come on. And he also said something what I think is very important. He said, yes, it is true that some advertisers are very keen on a certain demographic. But at the end of the day, the TV station looks at the ratings. The demographics are for the advertisers to decide what products they may want to advertise on the show, but the TV station themselves looks at the overall ratings. Not a key demographic. Because not every product is marketed to a certain demographic. So he said you have to compare the overall ratings. Now, again, he said, I hope Tony Khan and I still have a friendly relationship, but, you know, what he said about Ted Turner is stupid. It's not true. And Tony Khan is a relative newcomer to this. What he was trying to say is you can be a lifelong wrestling fan, and that doesn't mean you know how to run a federation. You can be a great businessman. That doesn't mean you know how to run a federation. Tony Khan has done a good job. But now he's showing his weakness, and his weakness is his ego, and he's trying to get through, we're better, we're better, we're better, we're better, and he's turning people off. Because instead of people saying, well, if you're better, just show it and we'll watch, he's kind of saying, we're better, and if you don't see it, you're dumb. To which wrestling fans are responding, okay, well, if I'm dumb, I'm not watching your product. So I think Bischoff has some good points. And I think Tony Khan is too into trying to play a character. And how do we word this? I think that Tony Khan is probably a decent businessman. His father's a far better businessman, but Tony Khan's probably a decent businessman. But he's immersed himself in this wrestling thing where he's always wanted to be one. He's always idolized the people in the business. And now he thinks this is my opportunity to be Mr. McMahon. It's not. This is your opportunity, Tony, to just go ahead and get your federation on a level where you're doing well. And another thing that Bischoff brought up is he said, you're not growing. This is the concern. You've been at 800,000, 900,000, right around in there. Yes, you have a peak, whether you do 1-1 and you have a little valley where you do 700,000. But basically, you're right around the 850 to 900,000. You have to look to grow. You can't keep having the same fans show up. You can't just keep having that same audience. You have to expand that audience. And your negativity toward the other federations is impeding you from growing your audience. And again, he said, I was killing Vince McMahon in the ratings when I was saying stuff like that. If you were a million ahead of him and you were saying it, I'd say, well, whatever. But you're not. You're a million down. And it's impeding your growth. I have to say, in this particular instance, I side with Eric Bischoff. I think he's right, Mike.
I think so, too. And look, here's the deal. Let's go back some 30-odd years to when, to the very beginnings of WCW, when Ted Turner bought out Jim Crockett Promotions. It took WCW, what, 4 or 5 years before they started to go on their run. He bought Jim Crockett Promotions in, what, 90, 91, somewhere around there. And they didn't start to have their rating success until about, what, 95, 96, 97, right? So it took them a while to get to where they were, to even get to the beginning of that 83 straight week winning streak they had in the ratings against Raw. And this wasn't just a key demographic win. This was overall ratings win over Raw, you know? So Tony Khan, in this respect, I agree with Eric Bischoff. Tony Khan needs to shut his mouth and just plug along and, you know, and grow.
Yeah, I agree. I just, at this stage of the game, to come out and be that aggressive, it is a mistake. But you know what? That's a mistake I think that, you know, I think that a lot of people would make. I mean, Tony Khan could just have easily, very much as easily, been doing 300,000, 400,000. He very easily could have bombed. He's never had a wrestling federation. He had some good talent, but, you know, we don't know where that's going to lead. He could have easily been crapping a bit. So I think when he realizes, look, I'm damn near a million views a week after 2 years. That's good. Let's not take away that accomplishment. That's very good. That shows that you have a product that people are interested in. So he should take a bow for that. But his main goal should be, let me expand that audience more. By year three, I want to be doing, you know, 1.7, 1.8. And I don't think it's going to happen if you continue down this path. So I understand him being a little bit proud of what he accomplished. My point is, talk about what you accomplished. If you came on the air and said, thanks to all the fans and thanks to hard work and dedication and all these wonderfully talented people, we went from a pipe dream that we were hoping would get a TV deal to a federation that's drawn a million viewers in just a little over 2 years. And we thank everybody for that, and we hope to grow again. And one of these days, who knows? Maybe we'll be right up there with WWE. That would be a very nice thing to say, a very humble thing to say, and I think it would be something that would endear wrestling fans to him and say, you know what, he's doing his best. When you start doing shots fired, you're going to piss off a certain amount of fans. You're just going to. WWE's been around a lot longer. They have more fans. So, of course, when a WWE fan who was a fan, you know, many years before you even existed, hears, oh, if you're watching WWE, you're dumb. If you're watching WWE, you're not really a wrestling fan. They're like, what the F are you talking about? How dare you say something like that? You can take your show and shove it. And then this is what ends up happening. You isolate your fan base. It's no different than if you put a sign up outside your restaurant saying, if you didn't vote for Biden, you're not allowed in here. You cut your audience in half. How successful are you going to be? Or Trump. If you didn't vote for Trump, you're not allowed in here. How successful is your product going to be? Because I'll tell you what's going to happen. There's going to be some people who say, yeah, that's right. If you didn't vote for Biden, you shouldn't come in here. That's great. I love that. I'm going to patronize that place. But there's also going to be some Biden supporters who say, that ain't right. That's not cool. That guy's an idiot. I'm not eating there. And, of course, all the Trump supporters are going to be like, you can go F themselves. Why would you isolate your potential audience? I don't understand what Tony Khan is doing there. I don't understand it. Saying, oh, well, they really shit the bed this week. They did 600,000 or 500,000, and we did three times that. And, you know, he just doesn't do that. And I think a smart business owner, Todd, just doesn't do it. I think Eric Bischoff's trying to give him good advice, not trying to make fun of him.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, sooner or later with Tony Khan, he's going to end up shooting himself in the foot saying the wrong thing. If he did already.
Yeah, I agree. And he kind of already has, to a large extent. Anyway, they put on a good show. Anyway, but let's get to the big news, which is, again, there's a lot of misinformation. So we're going to tell you what we know, and then we're going to tell you what I can absolutely corroborate as a fact. And then we're going to tell you about some speculation that could be true and may not be true. So here's what we know. Charlotte Flair did not want to have that belt change. She thought in some way, shape, or form, which I cannot comprehend how, that it weakens her character or makes her title reign look weak. Now, I've thought about this and thought about this, and I don't know how. She's still getting the belt. She didn't lose anything. She's just exchanging it because of brands. So I don't know where that came from, but that's the fact that she said, I'd rather not do this. As a matter of fact, she said, I would rather lose clean to Bianca Belair and let it go from there. They didn't want that. So Charlotte reluctantly came to the ring to do the belt exchange, not really wanting to do it. And everything you saw was scripted, with the exception of Charlotte Flair pulling the belt back away from Becky Lynch and throwing it on the ground. That was not supposed to happen. And for whatever reason, which again, I'm not really sure why she thought this, but Becky Lynch took that as making her character look weak. Or showboating her. I don't know why. I'm not really sure where either of their heads are on this. Charlotte Flair thought it was belittling to her to exchange the belt. No idea why. Becky Lynch thought that Charlotte was trying to make her look bad by throwing the belt down and making her pick it up, which she would not do, causing Sonya Deville to tell Charlotte Flair pick the belt back up, which she did. Now, from what we know, some heated words were exchanged when they got back to the dressing room. Nothing physical, just some heated words. Becky Lynch had to go back out to do a dark match. And apparently Charlotte Flair security and told she was leaving the building. Which means security walked her to her car. They effectively kicked her out of the building. Moments later, apparently, her fiancé, Andrade, put a F-U-W-W-E on his Instagram. And this is not good. This is not good. Now, there's some speculation. The speculation is this is a work. Those two are good friends. They've said it before. They've shown it before. That is very true. But from my sources, and I have some good ones as well as, you know, some other friends in the business of promoting and doing some other things, what I'm being told is they're not such a good friends anymore, and they haven't been for a little while. And the reason is that Charlotte is very unpopular backstage, that Charlotte, since Andrade left, has been very hard to deal with. She's not well-liked backstage. She stays to herself. She doesn't really interact with the rest all that much. And there's some speculation that maybe she just wants out of her contract and thinks this is the best way to do it. Now, this is the second time Charlotte Flair sort of went into business for herself, throwing the belt down when it wasn't scripted and then getting into a real fight with Nia Jax, which most people forgave Charlotte for because Nia Jax is a stumble bum who is constantly almost hurting you or accidentally hurting you, and Charlotte apparently had enough of it. So she kind of got a pass on that, but she didn't get a pass on this from the dressing room. And from what I'm being told, she didn't want to go to SmackDown, number one. And number two, they asked for her specifically. Fox asked for Charlotte Flair. And that Charlotte realized, I can get away with a lot of stuff now. Because if Fox asked for me specifically, what is WWE going to do, fire me? They're not going to fire me. They've just changed the rosters. I was asked for by name. They're not going to suspend me either. They're not going to do anything. I can get away with this. And she's disgruntled at being there at all. Now, there are some people saying, no, no, she's not looking to get out of her contract. She just now has this chip on her shoulder. She realizes the contract is solid. She realizes she's not going to be able to, you know, get out of it. And she's just going to ride out her time, but she's going to ride out her time her way because she thinks she's untouchable. And that's led to people who used to be very close to her and friends with her saying, I don't recognize who she's become. So for the speculation that this is a work leading up to a Survivor Series match, I mean, there could be a little bit of truth into that. But the real truth, as far as I can decipher it, is that she's become very unpopular backstage with other performers. And that she's acted very much the diva, and she thinks any little thing is somehow making her look bad. Now, that would be evidenced by the fact that she thought exchanging belts make her look bad. I don't know how. I've racked my brain trying to figure out. I mean, you would think she would embrace it and say, I'm here on SmackDown now. Naturally, I'm the star of the show. So naturally, I have to have their belt. Naturally, I want their belt. And naturally, they want me to have their belt. Raw's loss is SmackDown's gain. Raw's title means nothing to me anymore. So here, you take that secondary title. I'll take the real title. I mean, you'd have thought that would be the rub. But for some reason, whatever it is, Charlotte didn't want to do it and went so far as to say, I'd rather lose to Bianca Belair, which that would make her look worse. But for whatever the reason was, she did not want to do that segment. And Becky Lynch knew she didn't want to do the segment. Becky Lynch was made aware that she wasn't happy with it. But then when Charlotte did what she did, Becky took offense to it and said, now you're just trying to make me look bad and my character look bad, and that's BS. And I guess some very heated words were exchanged. Now, when you're let out of an arena with security, that's not a good sign. That's not a good sign. Because nothing went physical. So, and by the way, apparently, when you walk backstage, Vince McMahon is usually there, and you exchange some words with him. We heard Kevin Owens say that about a WrestleMania match one time. That you always walk up to Vince McMahon afterwards and say, everything good, you know, how was everything fine? It's just a matter of respect, making sure he's okay with your segment or your match. Charlotte Flair walked right by him, did not acknowledge him, did not make Vince McMahon very happy. Now, can they do anything about it? Probably not. I mean, what would you like them to do at this point? If they let her go, could they make her sit on her contract and not do anything for it? She has multiple years left. Could they make her sit? Yeah, I guess theoretically they could. And that Charlotte knows that. That's why she's, you know, she won't go too far because they could do that. They could just say, well, you're not on TV at all. We'll just let you sit and become a memory for 2 years. But they can't because Fox wants her. So this is a game of tug of war to a certain extent, Mike, where Charlotte is flexing her muscles, saying, I'm a big name. your TV networks are asking for me by name. I want to be treated as such, and I want to have wanting to have complete control over it. So we got a little bit of a tug of war going on here.
Yes, we do. And look, I thought her contract was a little bit shorter term than that. Maybe a year or less, you know. I mean, I thought it was a little bit more short term because the way she was treating it was several years, half a year ago when she goes, okay, I'm gonna trade or copyright these other names and other. This was before Andrade left. I'm gonna do this and copyright all these other things, and it was almost like she was preparing to leave, right? You know, at that point. So could this be could this be a ploy for her to get them? They could do what they did with Ted DiBiase when they said, I know you got, what was it, a year and a half, 2 years left on your deal. We're just gonna pay you not to wrestle. You know?
Yep.
And they did. They have that history of paying people not to wrestle. Charlotte's a little bit different because she's a bigger name than Ted DiBiase was at that time. And she's been requested for by Fox, like you said. And we know they fired her boyfriend, her fiance, and they just fired her dad. You know? So
yep.
I don't know if that's in the back of her mind, and I don't know what could have made her sour on, you know, her friendship basically with the best female wrestler in the business, Becky Lynch.
Yeah, you know, people are saying, well, their friendship isn't really soured. It's just that they had a disagreement, and that, you know, Becky is still. It's one of those things. Sometimes you do get mad at your friends and you say things. Becky really thought that her actions were uncalled for, and then it made her look bad. And some words were exchanged. But other people are saying, look, Charlotte's been different for a while, and she really doesn't give two damns about anybody back there anymore. And then, of course, after you walk by Vince McMahon, you're on your way over to support your fiance at AEW because she made it very clear that she was going over there to not be on camera, obviously, but to be there. It's a tough situation. It's a tough situation. But some words of advice to Charlotte Flair. When people act this way to a company that virtually made you, if I were Tony Khan, instead of saying, see, she wants to come. See, this is where Tony Khan may be a little naive. Instead of saying, oh, boy, I bet you she wants to come here. See, I bet she wants to come here. They're not treating her right. And, you know, you should take a look, Tony, and say, why wouldn't she do that to me? Maybe there's going to come a situation where I want her to do some stuff and I don't want to. How, if she would do that to the WWE, who virtually made her, virtually, they did make her, then what would stop her from doing it to me? I don't necessarily want someone like that on the roster, because if she would do it to that person, there's no reason she wouldn't do it to me. So I would tend to kind of shy away from someone like that. Because then you're just going to get caught up in it eventually at some point in time. You always have that ego of, it won't happen to me because I'm better. You know, it's like that girl who's cheated on every single one of her boyfriends and openly admits it and brags about it. And then you're like, oh, I'm going out with her. Like, okay, well, oh, but it's me. It's different. Yeah, okay. Well, that's going to be the same thing with Tony Khan. If he really thinks that Charlotte Flair won't pull this diva nonsense backstage, oh, she will. Maybe even worse, because then she's going to have some backup. She's going to have her dad there probably. She's going to have her fiancé there. Going to have a little clout. So I don't know, man. I don't know. I think this is the wrong way. Charlotte Flair, if I was to give her any advice, would be, you know what? If you're really unhappy and you want to go with your fiance, which is very understandable, Very understandable. Use your time wisely. Do as professional a job as you can. Make sure that your future boss sees you are a loyal and hardworking employee. And that's it. I mean, I used to have a friend who worked at a, I won't mention the name of the place, but basically he worked at a retail store. And another retail store was opening, and a former manager from the store he worked at was actually going to be a manager of that store. And he approached him and said, why don't you just leave and come over? You're a good worker. Leave and work for me. I'll give you, you know, a little bit extra money. And just turn, you know, just leave. And he said, well, I can't do that. I'd have to give him 2 weeks' notice. There's no way I'm walking away without 2 weeks' notice. And he said, oh, no, in 2 weeks, the job's going to be filled. You know, you have to do it now. Just, you know, you don't owe them anything. They wouldn't, if they fired you, they're not going to give you 2 weeks to just let you go. Just, you know, punch out today and tell them you're done. And he said, no. No, I'm not going to do it. I'll give them my 2 weeks if the job is open. I'll give them my 2 weeks. If the job is not open, then I'm not going to. Well, as it turns out, he did give them the 2 weeks. The job was open, and he got the job. And he was told later on, if you had punched out that day, we probably would have changed our mind. Because then you'd do it to us. Sometimes they make a test out of you. Let's see how loyal this guy really is. Let's see if he'd screw his former employer. If you'll screw your former employer, you'll screw me. Well, that's what I'm saying to Tony Khan. If Charlotte Flair would do this because she's unhappy, what happens if Andrade, you decide you don't want to resign Andrade, he goes to Mexico, she wants to go with him. She's going to do the same thing with you? She's going to make your locker room a living hell? She's going to mess up your spots? Well, past performance says yes. So I think this is a bad thing for Charlotte Flair. And I'm really surprised. Now, there are people on the internet saying, she sucks. She's so overrated. No, she does not suck, and she's not overrated. Charlotte Flair is one of the best female wrestlers on the planet today. I didn't say the best, but she's one of the best. And when she wants to, which is more often than not, to be honest, she puts on a very good performance. She's weak on the mic. Her gimmick's very old. And it gets older every moment. But she does deliver. But people are going to take a look at this, and it's going to sour them. And you don't want your legacy to be soured this way. I'm surprised Ric Flair himself doesn't say something about it and say this isn't the way to do it. Because you're just going to sour your own name in the wrestling business. Just go ahead. You've signed the contract. Do what you're asked to do. Time's going to fly by. Before you know it, your contract's going to come back up. And if you want to be here and they want you, then that's fine. No one is going to blame you for wanting to change jobs. They're going to blame you if you screw your job up on purpose to try to get released. They're going to blame you if you dog it. They're going to blame you if you do nothing but badmouth it. They are going to blame you. Just do your job. Let the contract run out. Just don't re-sign. Now, I know what every WWE superstar is worried about is that about 6 months before their contract is up, the WWE tries to re-sign you. If it's not going well or they think you're not going to re-sign, they ruin you. They try to ruin you so your worth is zero. They'll have her losing to, you know, everybody. They'll have her looking as bad as possible. Is that right? No, you know, it's not right, but at the same time, why should they promote somebody that they're not going to have? Why should you promote someone you know you're not going to be able to use within a 3 or 4 or 5 month period? So I can't really blame them all that much for it. She'll be dropping to Eva Marie. If she doesn't sign, she'll be dropping to Eva Marie before she leaves. But wrestling fans don't understand it anymore. They're just like, yeah, we know. You're going to dog her out now for 5 months. They don't even take that serious anymore. So I wouldn't worry too much about that if I was Charlotte Flair, Mike, but I think she's probably making the wrong decisions here when she starts going into business for herself.
Right. I think she's making the wrong decisions as well, and I just don't understand it. But and I know probably we're going to talk about this, but there is some things about Brandi Rhodes that we need to probably talk about. And it's all about her gimmick coming back, because she's going to come back, you know, her gimmick coming back after her pregnancy, you know. And my feeling is I was watching Road to the Top, and she talked about coming back as the same character, the bitchy heel type character. And you're not gonna, after you having a baby, you ought to learn a lesson from Becky Lynch. The WWE is trying to make her a heel. It's not working, but they're trying to make her a heel. And people are going to want to cheer. You're coming back from having a baby. People are going to want to cheer for you, right? You may want to do that character. Yeah, you're going to maybe want to do that character, but it's going to be hard for them not to cheer for you. And it's going to be hard for you to carry off that bitchy heel character, because people are going to want to cheer for you. You know?
I agree. I agree 100%. Now, you see, the thing is, I understand that it was a swerve. Everybody thought Becky was going to come back. And I know what they feared. They feared if Becky comes back and she's the face and she gets the belt right away, it's going to sour people on Becky. They're going to say, oh, here we go, and she's going to be like Roman Reigns, which is just everything handed to her. Oh, my God, she's the you know, teacher's pet now, and everything's going to be Becky, and they're not going to cheer her. That's what the WWE feared. But then the WWE has to say, Becky, when you come back, you know you're going to be cheered. You know the fans are going to want to see you win the belt. You know the fans are going to want to see you succeed. If we let you do it immediately, they're going to say, well, here we go. She's going to get handed everything. How boring. So we're not going to let you do it immediately. We're literally going to start you almost from scratch, with the gimmick being, I've been gone a long time. I don't know if I still have it in me. I feel sometimes I'm more of a mother than a wrestler now. Do I have what it takes? I could argue that you could have done a great gimmick by which everyone's making fun of her, saying she's not the Becky Lynch she used to be. The fire is gone. She always used to say she brings the fire. She doesn't have any fire anymore. She's a mother. It's gone. She's not that hard to beat anymore. Her mind is somewhere else. And then have somebody do something horrible to her, or say something horrible about her pregnancy or her child or whatever, and have her snap into the old Becky, where you poked the dog enough and the dog woke up. That's where I would have probably went with that, that Becky Lynch wasn't so good when she came back, that her mind was somewhere else, but somewhere in the middle of one of her feuds, the bear too much, and the old Becky Lynch came back. And then I think fans would have been fine with her kicking everybody's ass. You know, the saying could have been, the last kicker's back now. You know, she wasn't there before, but she is now. That would have worked. I think the WWE was right. If you handed her everything right away like you ended up doing, they were going to boo her anyway. I don't know if they would have booed her, but they wouldn't have been as into her. They just said, oh, God, another face being shoved down our throat. So they thought, oh, we'll be clever and make her a heel. Well, that didn't work either. The story to tell would have been a story that people could relate to, that Becky was going for a long time. She's a mom now. She's in a different mindset. She's not angry at the world. Her first priority is not kicking somebody's ass. She's not that person. She doesn't have that fire right now, because she's a new mom and the world is wonderful, right? and slowly progress it into she becomes the old Becky Lynch again. And I think fans would have followed her on that journey and said, this is what we've been waiting for. And you could have a great story behind it. The WWE is not patient when it comes to things like that. So they didn't do it. And you're right about the Brandi Rhodes thing. I don't know where that's going to go. Brandi Rhodes is not a good actress anyway. And again, this is where you're going to have some problems. If AEW has a problem, it's that when they do try to do these more entertainment-based things, they don't do them as well as the WWE. They are more of a purist wrestling federation where you say it's really all about what's happening in the ring. As evidenced when they tried to do the woke Matt Hardy thing and it was a joke. It was dumb. And even they realize this ain't working at all. This is not what AEW is about. We cannot do this. They realize that almost immediately. So you don't really see AEW as that kind of a federation. That's why I say Bray Wyatt won't fit in. They don't want to do those type of things. I don't think they want a guy who's going to be – now, they could change his image. But I don't know if they want anything even close to what Bray Wyatt was or has been. So we'll have to wait and see. But they that's their weakness. And that's where the clear defining line is. A wrestling purist is going to like AEW and maybe NXT, at least the old NXT, better than WWE. But someone like myself, I'm not a wrestling purist. I think wrestling should be entertaining. And sometimes a little bit comical, and maybe sometimes even a little bit over the top or silly. I enjoy that part of wrestling. That's the entertainment value of it. Two great athletes having a great match is fine, but so is over-the-top crazy stuff. And the WWE does that better because AEW doesn't even want to do it. So we'll see what happens with the Brandi Rhodes character. But, Todd, I think they might have made a mistake with Becky Lynch. Giving her that title immediately and making her a heel probably didn't do her any favors. I know she wanted it too, but it probably didn't do her any favors. And I think it would have been a much better storyline to tell the story of a woman returning, no longer what she used to be because of her newborn baby, and having to basically fight through that until one day, you know, the old Becky Lynch kind of snaps back.
Well, you're absolutely right there, like you said, with the Becky Lynch thing for a while. I would do the same thing what you just said. Have her come back, do like a little biography thingy, like different, something like that, of Becky Lynch.
You know what would have been great, Mike? Why couldn't we have had Becky Lynch come out to the huge cheers and everything, start, you know, say, oh, tomorrow night she's going to be in a big match, and just have her be against somebody, you know, fairly decent. Not a top woman, but middle of the card, and lose. Total embarrassment. Everyone's in shock. And keep that playing that she's just not doing that well. Even when she does win, she just barely does against people she should have dusted. And she's losing more than she should. And maybe if you kept that going for maybe a month and a half or so, and then have Becky Lynch say, I've rethought things, and to be perfectly honest, you're all right. I'm not the person I was. And I don't think I ever will be, because having this child changed my life. And I have to be honest with myself. You've all seen it. It's not like I'm not out here doing the best I can. And it's not good enough. And I don't want you fans to remember Becky Lynch this way. So I'm announcing my retirement. People would have took that serious. Then if you had somebody poke the bear and say, oh, well, Becky Lynch turned tail and ran. Becky Lynch didn't have what it took. At the end of the day, she kept saying she brought the fire. She brought absolutely nothing. So, and then just keep making fun of her, keep making fun of her. And finally make that one statement too much and say, you know, when your kid grows up, I hope they watch you quit. Because then we don't have to suffer another Becky Lynch. We don't have to suffer another quitter. It'll already be built into the system. Then if Becky Lynch came back and said, you know, I was very happy being a mom. I was very content. And then I thought about it. And you're right. I quit. And there's no way my child is going to think her mother's a quitter. I think if she came back then and she had a whole different attitude, a whole different fire in her belly, people would have said, oh, they should have left well enough alone. Now they've woke her up. This is the old Becky Lynch we wanted, and you'd had a tremendous amount of fan support for her because first you showed her weakness.
Right, and think about this. Who would be the perfect person to do that then?
Probably Charlotte.
You know, think about it. Yep, Charlotte. If Charlotte hadn't have done what she did, the perfect mm-hmm. person, well, you would say, well, maybe Asuka, but Asuka, her English is getting better, but it's still not where it should be. It'd be Charlotte. It'd be because you would buy that. Now that we know she's her friend, they're close somewhat, you know. They may have had disagreements here and there, but they're close. She would have been the perfect person to do this with. And look, what did they do when she first started to get big, right? She was losing, and then all of a sudden she started to win. And then
That's right.
caught on, and then we got the man.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. See, that's exactly the thing. And if they weren't so worried about PG and they weren't so worried about politically correct, I mean, you could have Charlotte take that extra step too far and say, you know, the only real tragedy is not losing Becky Lynch as a professional wrestler. The real tragedy is that you didn't have a miscarriage because your child is going to grow up with a weak, feckless, cowardly mother. Then that would have been it. People would have been like, holy shit. And then if Becky Lynch came back with a fire in her belly, they would have said, well, yeah, anybody would after somebody making a statement like that. But you see, the thing is, you really got to sell it. You have to sell it. You have to have the announcers say, that's outrageous. And even the heel announcers have to say, that's outrageous. How dare anybody say anything like that? Pull her off the air. Seriously, pull her off the air. What in the hell is wrong with that woman? That in no way is the WWE's philosophy. We apologize to everybody that went out too, and that's disgusting. Because then people would have said, well, she went way too far. There was a way to make Becky Lynch the top face again. It's not by just handing her a belt. It's not by making her so successful she easily beats everyone who's come before her. It was to show her weakness first, show she had a different out, because people could relate to that and say, if I had a child, it would change my life. Yeah. Maybe Becky isn't the same person. She doesn't have the same fire in her belly. But boy, Charlotte sure lit it. And now when she comes back and you have that moment where Charlotte Flair is doing something and Becky Lynch just comes flying out of the crowd or something and beats her ass, people would be like, oh, here we go. She woke up the bear. That would have been an awesome way to get 6 months out of Becky Lynch. Literally, you could have got 6 months out of this before you got that big moment. And fans would have ate it up. Would have been the perfect way to get her back as a face, because this isn't really working. Mike's right. It's not working as a heel. Nobody's booing her. They boo her a little bit against Bianca because everybody likes Bianca. They're not going to boo her against Charlotte Flair. And now if they're going to have to do this match at the Survivor Series, Becky Lynch is going to be cheered. You already know Becky Lynch is going to be the face in this match. So I don't know. I don't know where this goes. And as far as what you do about Charlotte Flair, you're in a jam. She's kind of got you over a barrel to a certain extent. You can't have her lose and just lose and lose and lose as punishment. Because A, she's your champion. You can take the belt away from her. She doesn't really care anyway. You can take the belt away from her, but then the bottom line is Fox is going to say, well, wait a minute. We didn't ask her to come to SmackDown to be used as a jabron. We want her to have more airtime. We want her to be featured. See, this is the problem when you're getting $1 billion from a network. Because they get to call a lot of the shots. And they'd be very unhappy. And they'd say, you can't do this. We wanted her, and now you're misusing her. So Vince is handcuffed to a certain extent to what he can do. And Charlotte knows that. Now, Andrade needs to shut his mouth. I have stuck up for Andrade time and time and time again, and I said to this day, one of the best matches I've ever seen in professional wrestling was Andrade versus Johnny Gargano in NXT. And I said he was woefully, terribly misused in the WWE. Having said that, he needs to shut his mouth. Okay? Your fiance is still working there. You want to make things harder for her? Keep it up. Keep it up. That's like the guy who keeps calling his wife's boss and yelling and screaming at him. You think that makes it easier for your wife? Knock it off already. Just wrestle. I got news for you. You went over there, you're not exactly lighting up AEW either. They're not exactly making you the guy. What hurt Andrade is very simple. In NXT, we had more wrestling purists. He didn't have to say much. All he had to do was get in the ring and do what he did, and people were interested. He had not a great command of the English language. When he first came in and they wanted to make him that playboy sort of whatever he was going to be, he couldn't pull it off because he didn't have enough command of the English language. Then when Angel Garza came in, he did it better. And all that did was underlie the fact that he couldn't do it as well. So he became expendable. WWE doesn't care if you can do 25-minute matches that are just spectacular. They care if you can do a 5-minute match that people care about. That's what people have to understand. There's a lot of wrestlers right now say, I can go 30 minutes and make this crowd, you know, stand up and take notice. WWE don't care. Maybe on a pay-per-view they care, but they don't care. It's your normal show because you ain't going to get a chance to do that. They've got 3 hours and about 40 different spots they want to do and about 9, 10, 12 matches, and you're going to get 5 minutes. And you can either do everything in that 5 minutes and make the crowd care, or you can't. And if you're one of those wrestlers who takes 10 minutes to warm up or takes 10 minutes to get into your story, you're screwed. Because the WWE don't want it. And unfortunately, Andrade's one of them guys. If you give Andrade 20 minutes, he'll give you a fantastic match. If you give Andrade 5 minutes, he can't get off the ground. That's just the way he is. That's his wrestling style. Some people can do both. AJ Styles was one of them. I told the story a million times. I'll tell it one more. AJ Styles said, I knew I was sinking in WWE. I knew it. I felt it in my bones that they weren't happy with my performances. And I went into Vince and said, what is it that you want? You have to tell me exactly what it is you expect. And then I'll give it to you. And he said, once me and Vince had our conversation, I understood. This is what you want. This is what you get. And if you watch AJ Styles now, he is very different than when he was in Japan. He's very different than when he was in other federations. He's more concise. It's more entertainment-based. He still uses a few of his good moves and things and shows his athleticism, but it's a very different feel to AJ Styles because he was able to adapt to it. Cesaro is one of those wrestlers. He can't do a 5-minute match and make it great. He has to have time. And that's what hurts Cesaro in the WWE. They don't give him the time. And so he can't get everything over in that. It's just not his style. Now, there are some guys who can't do more than 5-10 minutes or they're done. Those guys are going to do okay in WWE because they're used to that 5-6-8-minute style. So this was what Andrade fell into, Mike. And what he really needs to do is just shut his mouth and wrestle.
Yeah, shut his mouth and wrestle, and that's the deal. Now, just one more thing about the whole Brandi Rhodes situation. Basically, Cody said what I said to you to Brandi. What he said is, when you come back, and you will come back, when you come back, they're gonna want to cheer you. It doesn't matter whether or not you want to do this other character. They're gonna want to cheer you. You know?
Yeah. Well, it's common sense. It's common sense. Now, wrestling flies in the face of common sense all the time. When Seth Rollins came back from his injury, we all said he's going to come back and be a face because they're going to want to cheer him. He was injured. He's overcome it. He had surgery. He's back. Now they put him back as a heel. They missed those opportunities. You may as well run with what the fans want. That's why I said my Becky Lynch idea is good. The fans wanted her as a face, but they didn't want her to be a face that everything was handed to. They also didn't want her to be an ineffectual face. If you made her a sort of an ineffectual face, people would start to feel sorry for her. They could see her trying too hard. You could literally have the announcer say she's trying too hard to be the old Becky Lynch, and it doesn't seem to be there. She doesn't seem to have that. And when she finally comes to the recognition that she doesn't have it and says to the fans, I don't want you to remember me this way. I want you to remember the Becky Lynch who stood in this ring and gave you everything and was successful. This is not me. So I'd rather just leave and have you remember that Becky Lynch. Fans would be very much on her side. And when she came back, the old Becky Lynch, with fire in her belly and throwing, you know, haymakers, people would be like, great, we got what we wanted finally. The WWE took us on a little journey. That's what you're supposed to do. That's the psychology of wrestling. If you don't do that, and the WWE knows how to do it, and I'll tell you why I know they know how to do it. Because when Paul Heyman threw the belt in the ring in Saudi Arabia in the middle, part of the journey, he didn't have to do that. He could have threw it directly at Roman Reigns and just said, yeah, that's the way it is. But then where's the story? The psychology is, why did you throw it in the middle? Why did that happen? Was he trying to throw it to Roman and it didn't get there? Was he trying to throw it to Brock and it didn't get there? Was he saying, may the best man win, I'm leaving with the champion either way? Who knows? We'll know eventually. But that's the beauty of it. There's a story to be told, and you're stretching it out. You're making the fans wonder. You're making the fans anticipate. Soap operas do this all the time. I mean, I grew up around Sisters, so there were soap operas on the television, and I got a news flash for you. Sometimes, and this was on every day, these damn soap operas were every day. And sometimes it was a year of every day before that moment came that they were waiting for. You watched this thing a year? You watch this thing 5 days a week for a whole year to get to this moment? Holy crap. That's dedication. WWE doesn't think you're going to watch two shows. If it doesn't happen by the third show, they think you're going to forget. That's not true. You can stretch this and stretch this and stretch this. And if it's a good story, people are going to be like, just keep advancing it a little bit. Don't be on a treadmill. Give us a little bit more bite of the apple every week. You're getting closer. You're getting closer. You're getting closer. That's the way it's supposed to be. It keeps you anticipating. It gives you a little satisfaction of, we got a little more of the story, and eventually you're going to get it. That would have been the case with the Becky Lynch angle I just gave you. Let's get a little bit into SmackDown. There was some good stuff. And I'll tell you something. Did we ever call this? You know, the very first thing I thought of is I said, Jesus, we called this one right on the money when we said Brock Lesnar's got to come out there and literally go berserk. He's got to beat up everybody that he sees. And boy, he sure did. He sure did. And that audience was roaring. That audience loved it. And even beating up Adam Pearce was a pretty good idea. And again, I'm gonna tip my hat to the writers a little bit, because when Brock Lesnar came back out to confront Adam Pearce after being suspended, he said, I didn't hear you, so say it again. And he grabs Adam Pearce, and Adam Pearce says it again, and he gets mauled and says, say it again. He finally tells him, I still didn't hear you. Well, that leaves the fans wondering, what does that mean? Does that mean Lesnar's saying, I'll show up if I want to? Because that's what it sounds like. Sounds like, I didn't hear you, so therefore I can't obey you if I didn't hear you. Now, he's probably not, because he's not booked for any more things, but certainly I think the WWE could throw some money his way, and he might end up showing up somewhere. But it leaves the fans in some anticipation of what exactly is going to happen, and that's a good thing. Plus, you use this to further another angle, because Sonya Deville said, well, Adam Pearce has kind of left me high and dry to do this damn thing by myself now, I can see. She wasn't even really concerned about his health. So they used that to promote another angle that Sonya Deville obviously wants to be the sole controller of or general manager or whatever the hell they're supposed to be. So you used this to further a couple of different angles. And in the meantime, you made Brock Lesnar look pretty badass. And here's the funny thing. They actually used the word badass. They actually said that's a badass. It was unbelievable. It was like we wrote the damn thing, Todd. And I think he did a really good job. I think Lesnar did an excellent job.
I'm absolutely right there, like you said, about Lesnar and everything. He did a pretty good job throwing those people around, like especially with Adam Pearce. After two F5s, the funniest part, his pants ripped open, split open.
Yeah, I know it did. Listen, Lesnar is what we have called for, Mike. Lesnar's that guy that when he storms down, you know there's going to be trouble one way or the other.
Right. I mean, look, the whole thing with that is, think about this. What was Steve Austin's thing? You know, I go where I want to go. You ain't going to stop me. You can't. You can arrest
right.
me, but you ain't going to stop me. I go where I want to go. That's
yep.
That's where Brock Lesnar is. I mean, now, this set, you know what else this sets up? This whole thing with she being, Sonya Deville being in control. This basically sets up more stuff with her and Naomi.
Right. Right. Now, it's very interesting because does that mean Brock Lesnar can't show up maybe on Raw? Or probably he's not showing up at all because I know he's not scheduled for anything until the Rumble. But that don't mean they can't add date. I mean, I think they'd be open to doing that if they see the ratings have been really good or they think the fans are really clamoring for it. I think Vince would open up the pocketbook and say, what's it going to take to get you here to do a small, not a match, just a something. So you might see more Brock Lesnar appearances penciled in there. Thought it was very good. I'll tell you something else I liked. Some people didn't, but I did. I liked how they let people introduce themselves who were coming on to SmackDown. Even Sheamus, who doesn't really need an introduction. He's been there before. Everybody knows who he is. But some of the people needed a couple of minutes to sort of introduce themselves. And each person that did, I found myself saying, even though I knew who they were, I found myself saying, yeah, you know, I'm actually looking forward to seeing them. The top one being Ridge Holland. I think Ridge Holland could be another one of those guys that you say, oh, he's going to beat somebody's ass when he comes down. He just looks that way. So I'm very interested in that, too. I thought they did a good job with giving them each, like, 30 seconds, Mike, to kind of reintroduce themselves or introduce themselves to the SmackDown audience.
You know who really helped? Hit Row.
Well, they had a whole match. Yeah.
They had a whole match. And of course, it helped Hit Row, but it also helped not Andrade, but Carrillo. And, yeah, even though we know them, but it added to their character, Carrillo and Garza. I mean,
Garza,
It looks like what they're going to do with Carrillo is they're going to try and turn him into kind of a Garza-like.
Yeah, it looks like they're going with the, you know, two Playboy Lothario-type guys. Yeah, look, they're going to do well. They'll make a good tag team. I'm happy for Angel Garza because he's finally, I think, going to be used. Now let's get to Hit Row. I wasn't super thrilled with the way they introed themselves. It looked a little awkward, and they looked a little bit confused. And some of the guys, I think, I don't know, they took the mic, and by the time they got done, I said, I'm not even really sure what he said. But the rub I'm getting, I'm guessing they're heels. I'm guessing. Because the guys they fought, who the hell knows? Who the hell knows whether they're heels or faces? Heel tag their faces. they're going to fight a face tag team in their heels, and they end up fighting two guys I don't even know. I give Pat McAfee a lot of credit. I like Pat McAfee. Pat McAfee is one of the announcers that I think is going to end up being a whole lot better than anyone ever thought he was going to be. I think he gets it. I think he gets pro wrestling, and he understands, I got to be a character. I got to be larger than life. I got to be entertaining. I got to have a shtick, and he has all that. He's not just a guy going to say, okay, there's a drop kick. There's a this, that, or the other thing. He gets it. And I thought he was really funny when he was saying, this guy has won how many matches in a row here in this town, and this guy was a champion from whatever. I mean, you know he's lying, but it's still funny. And it helped. Because those guys didn't even get, you know, any kind of a real intro. Nobody knew who they were. So it was kind of funny that McAfee was trying to fill in, even though it was obviously propaganda. He's filling in the blanks, saying how they were, you know, five-time champions and all kinds of different things. My problem with Hit Row is going to be this. There's so many of them. You got one guy just standing outside the ring. He did nothing. So he didn't even get a chance. I don't know whether they're going to just make him a tag team like the New Day where they can randomly be any two of them. I don't know what they're going to do with their manageress there, what the, you know, how that's going to work out. She, unfortunately to me, didn't seem like she had a ton of charisma. Now, I don't know if they're going to make him heels and steady heels. She's going to have to do better. Because otherwise, I'm telling you what's going to happen is the big guy, he's going to overshadow everybody, including Isaiah Swerve Scott, and he's going to overshadow everybody. And you don't really want that. So they got to sort of do what they did with the New Day. They got to see how they all tie in and how they're all one close-knit whatever. Now, they got time to do that because they just introed them this week. But you're going to have to do that because if you just make them guys that come out together, I don't think they're going to quite have that charisma that they had hoped for, Mike.
Yeah, and look, they were, before they brought them up, they were in a feud with, who's the Hispanic?
Yeah, I know who you're talking about,
guys,
yeah.
They were in a feud with those guys, and basically the woman was starting to show some signs. Maybe they shouldn't have brought her up, but apparently she's a big part of the group, you know. And you know, yeah, they just started before they brought them up. They just started to put her in the ring, and she's a fairly decent in ring performer. All right, now is she good on the mic? Yeah, she's somewhat good on the mic, but can she get better? Yeah, anybody can get better, but we got to see what they're gonna do with her. Because, I mean, apparently she's a good athlete and all that stuff. Can they make something of her? Can they find a way to get her into the women's title picture or close to it? We'll have to see.
See, that's the thing. I got the sense that they were heels, and I thought, well, if they're faces, they're probably going to go against the Bloodline. They're probably going to go against Roman Reigns and the Usos and maybe Naomi. And I thought, well, that's got to be the direction they're going to head. But I don't know, man. They came across as heels. And then the other thing that bothered me is they almost all have the same mic style where they're all doing the, you know, I'm a freestyle rapper. I get it. But then you're all exactly the same. You know, I wish that there was, you got to flesh these guys out more. That's my point. We get it. You're all rappers. That's fine. Now give me the differences in your personalities, like the New Day. We clearly see the differences in all the New Day. Big E is not the same as Xavier. Xavier's not the same as Kofi. Kofi's not the same as any of them. They all have distinctive, and when they're together, and although those personas come together, it's even better. That's what Hit Row's got to do. They have to have those unique personas. Without it, they're just going to be a blend of just the same guy in different outfits. And we don't want that. So I'm going to reserve my judgment on them and see how they get over. My thought is they could get over well, And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there are faces. I don't know. I haven't been able to figure that out, Todd. What was your sense of watching them? Do you think they were heels or faces?
They were kind of like in between, like neutral. Like neutral. 1 minute they're faces and the next minute they're heels. Like mixing up in that match the other night. Technically.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. My first instinct after hearing them before they even got in the ring was, to me, they sound like heels, Mike. I don't know. What about you?
It sound like heels. In fact, well, the problem is back down, go back down into WWE, both of those two groups that were in, that were in a feud with each other, they both sounded like heels. So, again, but that feud wasn't, you know, both of those two groups were sounding like heels, right? So you really couldn't tell, but even back in the NXT.
Yeah, I agree with that. It just seems like they. I think Todd is right. I guess it depends on your perspective, but I would have just rather seen them come in one way or the other, because I think if you're going to add Naomi to the Bloodline, boy, there's your perfect feud. You could get a great Survivor Series match out of that, right? I guess you can't, because Roman's going to take on the champion. That'd be Big E. But, I mean, see, that's the thing. I wish they didn't do that. I really wish they didn't do that, because then it's perfectly okay for Roman to lose. Championship's not on the line. It's a tag team match. It doesn't matter. You know, different things can happen. It's not so predictable. As far as the rest of SmackDown is concerned, Drew McIntyre looked fairly impressive, beating up Sami Zayn. Sami Zayn is Sami Zayn. It's one way or the other. It's not all that impressive. But I enjoyed SmackDown this week. I thought that they did a good job coming off of a really, really good pay-per-view. And also, you know, these guys had a long flight. Some of the ones that went had a long flight. They still looked okay. So, you know, hats off to them. I would say that this week, I'd give it a flat B. I thought it was entertaining. I thought it went by fairly quickly. And other than the little weird stuff that happened with Charlotte and Becky, which I knew when it happened, I said something, right, they've either lost the script and they forgot what they're supposed to do, or Sonya blew it, or something's wrong. I knew something was wrong because it didn't feel right. But other than that, and, you know, a couple other little minor things, I didn't find any major problems with this show. What's your thoughts, Mike?
I think it could have been, you know, it could have been a little bit better, but I say about a B+, you know.
Yeah, I enjoyed it enough. And again, Todd, they had some good ideas in there. They did the right thing with Brock Lesnar, for sure. I think they did the right thing with letting the NXT guys introduce themselves. Remember, they didn't do that before. They just say, here comes a guy, and people are like, who is that? So this time they let him have a little bit of an intro, which was good. I think they did as well as they could with the rest of the matches. They introed Drew McIntyre in a decent way, a pretty strong victory. Overall, I thought it was a fairly good show.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it was a pretty good show. And like you said, with they did their introduce themselves intros and everything, it was one of the better shows I've seen like in a couple weeks, actually. Like you said,
so what's your rating this week?
You.
See, here's what I'm thinking. As I'm watching SmackDown, I said to myself, I'm starting to have more confidence in the WWE again. They pulled off a great show in Saudi Arabia. And now I'm seeing you introduce people that I'm like, I am sort of interested in this. Where are you going with Hit Row? I'm sort of interested with that. I remember when they used to intro people and you're like, oh, this is going to be new people. So there's going to be new stories and it's going to be, these are going to be top guys and we're going to have to keep our eyes out. And then for a while, the WWE is like, oh, we're just introducing people, and they're just going to be jabrons. We're introducing them, and their stories, there's not going to be any stories. We're introducing new people, and they lose the day we introduce them. So we lost all that. We lost that. It's going to be a big deal feel. I started to feel that again. When Hit Row came through, I said, they're going to do something with these guys. You're going to have to watch. There's going to be a lot of story behind this. Drew McIntyre even coming over. I'm like, you know, they're going to push him. There's going to be something here. Sheamus over there, you're like, you know what? I don't think they're just going to job him out. There's going to be something. Ridge Holland, I'm saying, I can't wait to see him in a ring and see how they treat him here on SmackDown. There were certain things that made me feel like this is going to be a big deal again now. They're going to start to really push. They're going to start to really tell you we're coming up with new characters, new gimmicks, new storylines. We're not going to waste talent. The talent that you see, we're going to really get behind. And I'm saying to myself, maybe this is going to work. Now, maybe I'm just an idiot and I'm putting my faith in a company that's let me down time after time after time after time. But for a good 15 or 20 minutes there in SmackDown, I'm saying to myself, this feels like the old WWE again. This feels like the WWE that I couldn't wait to turn on. You know, what's going to happen with Lesnar? What's going to happen with Paul Heyman and Roman Reigns? What's going to happen now that Drew McIntyre's over here? They got these new guys coming over, and they all look top-notch. They're giving some of the guys good airtime to flesh out their gimmicks and let us know who they're supposed to be and why we should root for them or woo them. It just felt like something was beginning to me again. And for the first time in a long time, I said, I'm actually interested and where this is going. I think the WWE may have looked into the rearview mirror a little bit and said, what did we do back then that was so good that we're not doing now? And they've come up with the answer, and that is flesh out characters, keep storylines fresh and interesting, introduce new people that weave into the storylines that we already have established in an interesting way. You know, it's like when you watch a television show, whether it be Arrow or The Walking Dead or Game of Thrones, and a new character comes in that you haven't seen before, and even though he doesn't do much, you say to yourself, that's going to be important. That person's eventually going to run into the important characters, and he's going to have an impact. He or she is going to have an impact on what's happening with these important characters, and that's the way I felt this week on SmackDown, Mike.
Yeah, that's the way I felt too. And look, again, we've said it for a long time about SmackDown, that for a long time SmackDown was the better show. You know? And if they keep doing things like this, then it will continue to be the better show, and it will other than the fact of what's happening with Charlotte and all that stuff, put that off to the side. Then you're going to see that if they keep doing stuff like this and it's the better show, then Fox is going to be extremely happy with them.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think so, too. They've already got the best story in the WWE, which is clearly the Bloodline is the best story. They've already got that. And now if you're going to intro some other things, you see, when you get a really meaty story and you can weave other characters in and out of that story, that's when it's the best. Instead of having separate storylines that never meet, you can have those two. You can have subplots where these people are, you know, this is a certain thing and it doesn't have anything to do with the main plot. But it's better often when these characters sort of intermingle and you say, look, this plot that really didn't have too much to do with the main plot, it's starting to weave its way into the main plot now. These characters are going to meet. These characters are going to interact with each other, and there is going to be a larger story to tell. That's when it becomes fascinating. And that's what I'm seeing here. I'm starting to see people being introed, and I'm saying they're going to weave these people into some of these storylines. And this should be interesting. And I'm hoping I'm right. I'm hoping the WWE doesn't let me down again. But just the very fact that they gave people 10, 15, 20 seconds to introduce themselves to the SmackDown audience who may not be familiar with them and cut a short little promo that give us a feel to who they are made me think the WWE realized this may be what we were missing. Do we remember when Val Venus introed himself and it was week after week after week? We'd have these little vignettes of him on the set of a porno film or taking a shower or doing whatever and talking himself up, and you're like, can't wait to see him. This is going to be interesting when he comes in. We knew exactly what he was. When he walked through the curtain, we're like, we know exactly who he's supposed to be. Same way with Razor Ramon. Same way with Ludwig Borga. Same way with all these people who had vignette after vignette after vignette before they ever walked down to the ring. So we clearly knew who they were. We clearly knew what they were about. And the only mystery now was, how do they perform in the ring? And we got to see them for the first time and see their move set and their attitude and what they do. And then we could speculate, oh, they're probably going to go up against this guy, or they're going to be in a feud with this person, or I can't wait to see these two people collide. Well, now I'm not starting to feel like that. Now, I'm watching Ridge Holland and I'm saying, you know, this is going to end up probably being like a Drew McIntyre feud, or maybe a Sheamus feud, or something. There's going to be some hard hitting. He's going to maul some people, and then he's going to run across some guys who are big dude, tough dudes too. That should be interesting. You already know that Garza and Carrillo are going to be the sneaky sort of, we got a victory the easy way, and we may not be the toughest guys, but we're clever and smart and quick and agile, and they're going to be players. Ali is going to be a player. Hit Row is going to be players. They're going to work their way into some of these main angles. And that's what makes it fascinating, is to speculate on, And it's been a long time since that happened to me. It's been a long time since I seen a character and instantly said, oh, I'd like to see him fight this person or that person. The very first thing I said with Hit Row is, man, you got to get them in there with the Bloodline at some point. Very first thing I said with Ridge Holland is, oh, well, there's, you know, Drew McIntyre's feud probably. That's going to be a big feud. There are certain things that we like to speculate as wrestling fans when we see these characters for who they're supposed to be. And the WWE didn't let us do that for the longest time. They just marched a guy out. That's why we voted Angel Garza most impressive debut on Raw. They just marched that poor bastard out. Nobody knew who he was. You're like, okay, Zelina Vega's walking out this guy because Andrade's hurt. And you're like, oh, half the people were like, I don't even know who that guy is. What's his gimmick? What's he supposed to be? Who is he? Where did he come from? They didn't even know. So he got zero reaction because nobody knew. And he realized that, though, and was able, in those 6 or 7 minutes they gave him, to get that crowd riled up. Really, really involved them. And that's why I said, now that's impressive. Because he took a crowd that couldn't give one damn about him 5 minutes ago. And by the time he got out of the ring, they gave a damn. That's not easy. And that's when you're a second or third generation wrestler, you have that ability, but a lot of people don't. For the ones who don't, you have to give them some kind of intro. You have to have the fans anticipate them and say, okay, this guy's coming soon. He's going to be a big deal. I remember watching the Ludwig Borga skits, you know, and it's clear he's a heel. He's anti-American. He's against everything that America stands for. He's a big, strong, you know, raw bone dude. He's going to be real powerful. And before he ever stepped into a ring, you're speculating, how would he do against this guy? And I bet you he's going to come up against him. And this will be interesting to see. And then, so you had some kind of motivation for wanting to see them make their debut. And the WWE knew that because they'd say next week he makes his in-ring debut after 4 or 5 weeks of skits. They knew. They understood how to play the game back then. And then they stopped doing it. Maybe now, Mike, they've woke up a little bit and realized we may not be able to do this for every person, but at least we can intro them a little bit and give them a taste for who these people are.
Right. And think about this. You know, think about this. How many times did they do the whole billion-dollar Ted thing before we introduced Ted DiBiase? How many vignettes did we see of Kurt Hennig, you know, doing what he did, playing pool, shooting basketball, diving, whatever it was on that particular week. How many vignettes of that did we see before he even set foot live in an arena or in a ring? You know, there's that, you know. Oh, and one other thing, I just put an article on the Facebook group about, basically, it's about B-Fab, the woman with Hit Row. So
okay,
for everybody who's on the Facebook group, go check that out. That explains a lot about her.
Yeah, I think you're right, though, that you see these vignettes used to be important. And then the WWE said, oh, that's 80s. Nobody wants to see them anymore. But truthfully, we do. Truthfully, we do, because then we understand who the character's supposed to be. And you give us a little backstory about – it doesn't have to be corny. They don't have to be a wrestling clown or a wrestling plumber. But you can give us an intro. I mean, just an intro that you gave us for Ridge Holland. He's not a wrestling clown. He's not a wrestling plumber. But we get the idea what he's supposed to be. We get the gist of who he is and what he's about. That's important. That's why I said I wasn't too thrilled with Hit Row, because I don't think they got over we're heels or faces. That's the thing. I think the crowd is still confused, saying, okay, we get it. You're a rap artist, and I guess she's your producer. But are you heels or faces? Are you – yeah, you're confident. We get it. You guys think you're the best, but so does a lot of people who are the faces. So are you faces? Are you heels? Are you – I wish they'd have fleshed it out a little bit more. Maybe they will next week. Maybe they'll do that. But they're going to have to. They're going to have to make a decision. Because if they're faces, they got to get the crowd into it more. If they're faces, they got to be playing to the crowd. They didn't play to the crowd. That's why I say I don't think they were faces. I didn't hear them say, come on, everybody, you know, get up and, you know, raise some hell and, you know, make some noise. They didn't do that. They were just all about, I'm this, and I'm that, and I'm this. Well, that's sort of a heel thing, but then again, maybe not, because Sasha Banks was a face doing the same exact thing. It's all about her. So I don't know. I wish they'd have fleshed that one out a little bit. My thought is that Ridge Holland's a heel. From what he said, it's sure to hell sounds like he's a heel. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but that's the sense that I got. I wish they would do this more. If they had done this with some of the other characters, I think they would have went over better. Now let me talk a little bit about maybe one of the most polarizing people on SmackDown, and that is Happy Corbin and Madcap Moss. I have had people write to me and literally say, this has got to be the stupidest, most inane, unwatchable nonsense I've ever seen. Can't stand it. So over the top stupid that I feel like they're insulting my intelligence. And I just can't disagree more. I love this gimmick. I don't know why I do, but I do. I can't tell you exactly why I like this. All I can tell you is this. It appeals to me in some way, as it sort of makes perfect sense. I don't know why it makes sense to me. But it feels, and I've said it before, it feels like Happy Corbin is like the Frank Sinatra of the Vegas Strip. Got everything going his way, smooth, lucky as can be, whatever. And Madcap Moss is his little hanger-on who makes him laugh and, you know, gets the benefit of his money and his time. And he's not funny. Obviously, he's not funny. Obviously, all the jokes are dumb. That's the whole point, is that no one in their right mind would think it's funny. But when you're a millionaire and you hit it big and you're whatever, anything reasonably funny you're going to laugh at, because, hey, life's good, right? Guys, just like, as long as I can make him laugh, I'm hanging with the big dog. I'm hanging with a guy who's a high roller and a, you know, millionaire. And it just appeals to me. It just appeals to me. And I do, and no one looks at that guy. I'm telling you right now, I would have never thought in a million years that Randy Moss could have pulled this character off. And he pulls this character off fabulous. You may hate the character, but I'm telling you, this guy plays that character perfect, and it's not that easy of a character to play. You really, number one, you got to look the part. and he definitely looks the part. Number two, you got to have that ridiculous laugh and that the facial expressions and everything, the body language. He has it. The outfit is perfect. Everything about that character, as dumb as it is 100% on the money for me, and I like it. And him being with Corbin is absolutely perfect. I've said it before. I saw Corbin in a couple of commercials several months back, and I said, this guy can play a variety of characters. You don't have to make him a badass, and you don't have to make him a suck-up authority figure. He can play different things. Now, Corbin has played everybody from this lone wolf, badass, semi-biker type guy to a corporate puppet to now this sort of a Hawaiian shirt wearing, weird hat wearing, Vegas playboy, whatever he's supposed to be. And he does it well. He did them all well. You can't fault Baron Corbin for any of this stuff. Everything you've given him, he's played to the best of his ability, and he's played it damn well. I think he's a very underrated WWE superstar. Very underrated. Because most people are a one-trick pony. They either play this character, that's the character they play, that's it. You try to give them anything that's different or variates too much from that one area, they can't play it. Baron Corbin has went from one extreme to another. He played the poor down-and-out slob with the ketchup on his shirt. Now he's playing the high-rolling playboy sort of Vegas guy, the biker guy, the corporate stooge. He's played it all, and he's done it very well. So, Todd, I think he's vastly underrated.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said about the Baron Corbin characters he did, you know, this is one of the best ones he ever did during this Happy Corbin thing. He won the jackpot at the casino and all that other stuff. And it's just like a Vegas, the Frank Sinatra, Tony Bennett type.
Yeah, I still think he should be called Lucky Corbin. I still think it should have been Lucky Corbin, because the idea is he keeps going to Vegas. He keeps winning. He's just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. He's the king of Vegas. That's better than happy. Obviously, if you're rich, you're going to be happier than if you're poor. I would have rather seen him be Lucky Corbin, but I just think this duo is great. And if they added a woman, if they added a gold-digging woman, Mike, who is like, you know, hanging on to Baron Corbin because he's got the big money and he's the high roller, they really would have something, I think.
Right. Think about this. Back, I know we're not, we don't have a lot of people that are interested in the history of wrestling. You, me, and Todd are, but go back and research people. Go back and research the Rat Pack,
right,
which eventually became Akbar's Army. And in that army, at one point, was Hacksaw Jim Duggan and Ted DiBiase and Dr. Death and Hercules Hernandez and all these people. And basically, Ted DiBiase was playing this sort of well-to-do, this exact role. Maybe a little bit less comical than Corbin is, but it's the exact same thing. And look, my thing is, if you're going to – and look, you look at Riddick Moss, he is – he don't look it, but he is an African-American type. He is an African-American. He's black. You know, you could absolutely add another couple of guys, because he's basically serving – if you go the original Rat Pack with Frank Sinatra, if what's his name is Frank Sinatra or Frank Sinatra type, then Riddick Moss is – what's his name with the black fellow with the glass eye?
Sammy Davis. But then again, he could be Jerry Lewis, too. I mean, I don't know. It doesn't matter, really. It's just that there's always that one guy. They've got it right. There's always one guy who's like he's the central focus. He's the guy that has the money. He's the guy that has the luck. He's the guy that's the king of Vegas. And then you got the guy who's, you know, his lackey, who, as long as I make him laugh and I bring him a drink, I'm going to get the benefit of some of his money. And then there's a gold-digging woman who's always like, well, I'm beautiful. As long as I hang on his shoulder, he'll give me everything he wants. And then there's usually a guy that's like his bodyguard. See, I would have loved, absolutely loved, to see AJ Styles and Almost split and have Almost be the bodyguard. And then maybe get somebody, I don't know if you want to just have a new person come along or you want, even if you used Eva Marie, that's fine. There's nothing else to do with Eva Marie. At least make her earn her money. If Eva Marie was on the arm of Baron Corbin, that's good enough. That's good enough. And then at least you're using her for something she's good at, which is being eye candy. That's what it is. You would have a really nice stable. And I would be all for that. I'm telling you, I would be all for creating that type of a stable. You don't need to use Almost if you don't want to. You find a guy that's big. Now, Corbin's big himself. So that's a thing. You're going to have to find a pretty big dude. Corbin's not heavy or thick, but he's tall. So you'd have to find a guy that's kind of thick, like an Otis. Or, you know, if you had a had, if you didn't fire, I can't even think of his name now, Bronson Reed would have worked. Somebody big, somebody that you say, yeah, well, that looks like a bodyguard, yep. You would have such a great, I really think fans would take to it. Now, whether they'd boo him out of the building, that's fine. Maybe some people would like him, like me. That's fine. Either way, you'd have a really, really solid stable of wrestlers, Todd, and it would be a lot of fun.
That's absolutely right there. Like you said, it would be a whole lot of fun with some of these guys. Like, Almost, he could be in a thing with Moss and Corbin, doing like this Rat Pack thing. You could do a lot of stuff with this with him, and you could bring in a gold-digging female as well.
Tomorrow, if I were writing for the WWE, my pitch idea would be you've got 2 out of 4. You've got the clown. You've got the head guy. You got the head honcho. You need a bodyguard and you need a female. And you've got yourself a tremendous stable that would be very entertaining and we could do a lot with. I think they're missing the boat if they don't do it, Mike.
Right. You know, and think about this. Think about this. You look at Hit Row, and that's exactly what they have. Swerve Scott is the head guy. You got the big guy with top dollar, and you got the female, you know?
Yep.
And you got to hang on with the Ashanti's, whatever his name is, whatever his name is, you got to hang her on. So you got that, and it looks like it's going to work with Hit Row, but you got that with Hit Row. You know, I mean, frankly, if you didn't want to have her being the female, and if you wanted an actual wrestler to do that, hell, Carmella, because that's basically her gimmick. I'll get what I want the way I want it, you know, and if I have to use people to get it, then so be it, you know.
Right.
And hell, here's some other thing. If you hadn't have fired the Big Show.
Yeah, or even, you like know? I said, even Bronson Reed, if you had to let him go. You could start doing this gimmick by which literally whoever – what I would pitch is this. Whoever you got for the bodyguard is also like the chauffeur, and let him come out in a limo. Let the limo pull up like almost like JBL used to do. And then out comes Happy Corbin. Out comes, obviously Madcap Moss, the girl. And then the chauffeur guy in the suit, big, huge, freaking monstrous dude. And I just think it would be so great. And you could shoot so many good promos on that. And then think about it. If you want to make Hit Row the faces, well, then you've got exactly what you need to do 4-on-4 matches, right? You got a big guy in Hit Row. You got the big guy in the chauffeur. You've got a girl in each one. You've got a good matchup. You've also got a good matchup if you want to go against the bloodline or whatever. The deal is they make a good pair, but they need that extra something. And that extra something, minimally, the extra something is a female. But I still say a bodyguard would be great because then you'd have a legitimate faction. And the bodyguard doesn't have to say anything. That's why I said it would be great for Almost, because he didn't have to say a word. As a matter of fact, if he was just dead silent and just he's just there, you'd be like, yep, that's great. That guy says nothing. He's just a monster. And, you know, you don't know what's going to happen when he gets unleashed. And you don't let him do anything right away. You don't make him a wrestler right away. You just make him a guy who, if somebody's in trouble, he comes in there and kicks everybody's ass. That way, you'd establish, well, we got quite a little faction here. But either way, my greater point is, Mike, Baron Corbin has really delivered in almost every single character they've given him to the best of his ability, and I think he's vastly underrated.
Right. You know what? He has the feel of our friend that used to do the whole, that they gave, he used to do the imitation of the Miz and all this stuff. He has that feel of that guy that you could give him anything and he could turn it into something.
Yeah, you know, you're right, because I got news. If you're 6 foot, just think about this. I think Baron Corbin's 6 foot seven and he's a legitimate Golden Gloves boxer. And if you're going into wrestling, you would assume I'm 6 foot seven. I'm a legitimate Golden Gloves boxer. I should be a badass, right? I should be this guy that's just like I'm storming down to the ring and kicking everybody's ass. Corbin has not asked to be that. Corbin has been a stooge. He's been a patsy. He's been a dude on Skid Row, basically. It's practically suicidal. And now he's doing this happy Corbin sort of far from a badass. He is able, at his size, it's not easy. You know what I mean? It's not easy to make that type of guy sort of a beatable, yeah, he's the head guy, but, you know, he's not too tough. But he's managed to pull it off. He's managed to pull that off. Now, I don't know what they're going to do with Madcap Moss. I fear that they're just going to throw him to the wolves and he's going to be a guy that always gets beat up. I hope not. I hope not, because that guy's a pretty good-sized dude. And I'd like to see him get a few wins, you know, under his belt. I know they want to feud him with Nakamura and Rick Boots. I get it. And that's a natural thing. And there's only two of them. But please, WWE, consider making a sort of a Rat Pack. Consider making sort of a Las Vegas faction of a high roller and his stooge lackey comedian and his chauffeur bodyguard and his girl, because you'd have something great. Very entertaining. Anyway, folks, what are we going to see Monday night? Well, we're going to see the new roster to an extent, so this will be interesting to see. We're going to have to figure out what's going to happen with Big E and where he goes from here. A lot of people have been asking, well, what's next? I mean, well, who's Big E going to fight next? Are they going to go back to Lashley? No, they're not going to go back to Lashley. In fact, they're going to have to do some serious rehabbing on Lashley, because Lashley has lost a lot of his last several matches. So they're going to have to rehab him somehow. I hope MVP's coming back soon, at least if he can just walk down on with a cane or something, you know, anything. Because Lashley needs him. They probably should rehab the rest of the guys in the Hurt Business, too, and try to get that faction back together as quickly as possible. But I don't know who's next for Big E. I look around and I say, you know, whoever it's going to be is not going to win. They're not going to change this belt until WrestleMania, I can tell you that. And I'm just not sure where that's going to go. I mean, there was some word that maybe Kevin Owens was going to come back with a much more heelish character, and maybe he was going to go at it with them. They have some history. But I don't think that's going to generate that much interest. I don't think anybody thinks Kevin Owens is championship material right now. He's not been portrayed as that. And, you know, if you just bring him back and say, oh, he's going to go against Big E, well, he's not winning. So I don't think that's going to work. Not really sure. Who do you think may be next up for Big E, Mike, given the new rosters?
I got no idea. I mean, look, if he wasn't in a tag team and they kept Dolph Ziggler strong as a singles guy, then there's your end. because he was his bodyguard, and now, you know, he could play off of that and all that stuff. You know, that would be an end if they, if he's not, if Ziggler's not in that tag team and they kept him strong. But I don't know. I don't know where he is, what he's gonna, you know, what he's doing. Now, here's something else we can find out on Monday night. Now that Sonya Deville is basically in total charge of, well, kayfabe charge of the booking and the, all this stuff in the WWE, you know, as the general manager, are we going to see some more of her and Naomi? Because she's in charge. Naomi's over there on Raw, and she's in charge of both shows now. It's Sonya Deville.
Yeah, I think Naomi's on SmackDown, though, because that's why she's going to be with the Bloodline. So I think she's going to be on SmackDown. I don't know what we're going to see. You know, some people are saying Karrion Kross, Karrion Kross. I don't think it's going to be Karrion Kross. I think Karrion Kross is going to be for Damian Priest. I think that's what's next. I think Damian Priest and Karrion Kross are going to be the feud. Keith Lee is possible. Some people are saying Keith Lee. Yeah, that's possible. If you bring Keith Lee back as a heel, Big E and Keith Lee could be possible. That would be something I wouldn't mind seeing. It'd be good matches, and of course you could promote it as, this is a guy who Big E is not going to outpower him. And he's also not as agile as Keith Lee. So you could put that into the mix, that this is a guy who Big E's not going to outpower, and he's probably not going to outmaneuver either. So this is a big threat. So I think you could do that. Karrion Kross is the wrong guy, because we already know he's not going straight to the title. It's much better to put him against Damian Priest, much better. But I'd go with Keith Lee. I think that could potentially be right. Todd, what do you think?
You're absolutely right there. Like you said, with Keith Lee, and if they let him do what he normally does, I'm all for that. Keith Lee and Big E right there.
Yeah, I think that'd be an entertaining match. I think that's probably, I don't know how the WWE feels about Keith Lee. I've heard varying things, you know. I've heard Vince McMahon was totally in love with him at first, and he didn't like him at all. I've heard they've given up on him. I've heard, no, they're going to try to rebrand him. I don't know. But it would seem like that would be a logical step, Mike, is to turn Keith Lee heel and put him against Big E.
Yeah, but the problem is will they be – I mean, I don't have any confidence in the WWE turning anybody anything, because they – I mean, we've seen what's happening with Becky Lynch. They tried turning her heel, and, well, we see what happens with that. So turning him heel may or may not work, you know?
Yeah, it may not is right. I mean, but I think that when I saw Keith Lee the first couple times independently, he was a heel. And he did it well. And that's why when he came to the NXT and he was a face, I'm like, oh, well, let's see how this works. And he did the face well, too. But I think the very nature of Keith Lee is he's a heel, but he's a different kind of heel. He's not one of these Brock Lesnar, I'm going to break you in half heels. He's one of these, I'm a big guy, but I'm also sort of intellectual, and I have a big ego and type heels. He's one of those type. If they can do that, it might work. I mean, it's better, I think, than the alternatives, because what's the alternative? Kevin Owens? I don't think that's going to work. I really don't. I mean, I guess you could do it just temporarily to say, well, whatever, it's somebody to throw in there. And I don't think Keith Lee would win, obviously, even if he gets it. Keith Lee's not winning the title. But you could make me believe that they might do it, at least. I don't believe they would have Kevin Owens do it. I don't think they have that kind of faith in Kevin Owens at this point. Now, I do have some word here that Braun Strowman was spotted flying to Las Vegas from Chicago, but there is no deal supposedly yet with Impact Wrestling. And that Bray Wyatt was also contacted about coming into Impact, but that deal wasn't completed. And Wyatt still, of course, has a no-compete clause. So, you know, at this point, we don't, I think it ends just before Halloween. And then Bronson Reed was actually booked for Bound for Glory and then pulled. So I have no idea what happened there. But mark my words, what we said at the beginning of the show, Moose is a transitional champion. You got a guy coming who's going to be a bigger name than that, and he's going to get that belt. And I would assume it's at least two out of the three guys I mentioned is probably the ones that they're going to try to get. Now, I don't know about this Bray Wyatt thing. Something has never set right with me since day one. And we have heard things as crazy as Bray Wyatt went a little bit off the deep end after the death of Luke Harper, and he didn't really want to wrestle, and he's been weird. I don't think that's true. And then we heard, no, it was just because he got lazy and his weight, and I don't believe that's true either. And then, oh, he was hard to work with. He didn't want to do this. I don't know what's going on. But Bray Wyatt has tweeted saying that he was going to feed the little birds soon, us being the little birds. And I don't think it's going to be AEW, Mike. So my assumption is that Impact is going to try to work out something with him.
Yeah, I think so, too. And think about this. You're looking at Impact. That could be a very strong roster, number one, on both sides of the aisle in terms of, you know, women and men. But if they bring in Wyatt and they bring in Strowman, can Eric Rowan be too far behind? I mean, people might say, well, that's a little bit much, but it would make sense.
Not a little bit much for me. I say go for it. If you can get him, and I imagine you can get Eric Rowan, if you can get Braun Strowman and you can get Bray Wyatt, you can get Eric Rowan. And if you wanted to put that band back together, I'm all for heading to the concert, if you know what I mean. I think that would be a hell of a lot of fun, and that would bring Impact a lot of attention. If the WWE never quite did that the right way. You know, they had the world in the palm of their hands there for a while with that faction, and they never quite used them the way they should have. And even though we no longer can add Luke Harper to that outfit, this is a chance for Impact to use them the right way. This is a chance for Impact to just change it up a little bit so it's not a direct copy of the WWE, but use them in a correct manner, and I guarantee you're going to get a ton of eyes on your product. Anyway, enjoy Monday Night Raw. We'll be back here Tuesday to talk about it. You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.